On this episode of Atomic Moms, we talk about our podcast inception and why we're so excited to bring you all the latest parenting tidbits. Our guest is none other than my husband, Michael Catherwood, from the radio program Loveline with Dr. Drew. He drops some dad bombs and Rudy and Sad Girl visit. Hey guys, welcome. Atomic Moms, first podcast. Ellie and I are laughing sitting here because we feel like we're so unqualified to do this. but we're going to do it nonetheless because we feel like it's important and we feel like we have things we want to talk about and hopefully things that you want to hear. And my lovely and beautiful co-host.
I feel like we're birthing a dream right now.
Yeah. Ellie, I didn't even ask you what last name you're going to go by.
Noss. I don't know. I'm tempted to go to my married name, which is Steekiel. But there's a Y and a K and a Z.
They're both hard to pronounce.
They're horrible.
When you look at them written on paper.
Yeah. For Noss, I always get Canis.
Oh.
Always.
Last night, I was at a premiere of a movie that I did, a little horror flick. And my co-star mispronounced my name horrifically, like absolutely butchered it. And in that moment, I thought to myself, this is a lifetime for me of just biting my tongue. And smiling because I don't want to hurt his feelings.
You didn't correct him.
I didn't correct him. It was in front of a whole audience. It was the Q&A section.
Well, when he listens to this, he is going to be mortified.
Mortified.
What is the name of your film?
It's called Dark Was the Night.
Dark was the night.
I filmed it about almost 3 years ago now, and it premiered at Screamfest.
Ooh.
In LA. It was actually a lot of fun, and I have to say I was happy with the end product. I think that, you know, I am not a huge fan of horror movies, but this one was a little more character driven and I had a great time shooting it. And there were some true horror fanboys in the audience, and they were very, very complimentary, and that made me happy.
Aww.
So yeah.
Are there any babies in the movie?
I have children in the movie. That was very interesting because when I shot it, I was not a mother yet. And now watching it as a mom, mm-hmm. Because I remember at the time when I filmed it, I was like, God, I don't know if I'm really scared about betraying not only a mother, but a mother who her 6-year-old has drowned. And a mother going through loss. Hard enough to be a mother going through loss, whole nother deal. But now having a kid and watching it, I felt like I did a pretty good job. I could identify with how nobody can identify until they go through that. But what did you do last night, Ellie?
What did I do last night? I don't even remember. I put my baby down to bed.
Yeah.
She is obsessed with bath time with daddy.
Well, that's nice.
It's really cute. He wears his swim trunks.
Oh, he gets in with her.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because she's really spazzy right now. And so, like, I put her in once by herself, and it just seemed dangerous. She's really slippery. She's too big for the little tub to go in the big tub. So they just sort of do, like, a swim time together.
Oh, I love that. That's really sweet.
But I think she's favoring him now. Because I was gone last weekend to help out my mom in Houston, and so now she's daddy obsessed. She's crying when he left this morning.
Oh, no. Yeah. And that does that just kind of shatter your heart? Are you hurting
jealous.
A little bit?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny, by the way, when you talk about Adam, your husband, being in the bath. Because for those of you listeners out there that don't know, Ellie's husband, Adam, is my boss in the daytime. He is the creator of Undateable and
On NBC.
And so the thought of him in the tub in his swim trunks makes me laugh and gives me good fodder for work, making fun of him. And so here we are, which I think is a good kind of lead into our podcast and how that kind of all came about and what our plans are here, even though I know we won't stick anywhere near to what we're planning to do because that's just not the kind of chicks that we are.
No.
But we were at brunch with our guys.
With our guys. In Venice.
In Venice with our kids, with our girls.
Kids.
It was the first time you had met Magnolia.
It was so sweet. And I put my daughter Sabrina in these little sweatpants from Zara. They have arrows on them. And so they were like my Venice sweatpants for her. And then it was so ridiculous because we're at brunch and I thought she was being such a cute little like Venice hipster in her sweatpants. And then another kid had the same sweatpants.
No.
And like, so I knew I was in the right place. You're just well.
Yeah. You either feel jealous or you feel like, wow, I fit in.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. And so we were at brunch and I don't even remember what it was that we were talking about, but something that
I just asked if you thought about doing a podcast. The two of you, you and Mike.
Oh, and then I looked at you and I was like, we should do a podcast, even though we have no business doing a podcast.
Yeah, but who does? I mean, people do this in like their basement. So,
yeah,
we don't have basements in LA. So we're in a fancy studio.
We are in a fancy studio, which makes me feel very grown up and nervous. And we were very giddy about starting this today. And
you're glowing.
I'm really happy. I feel like I've found another calling, even though I don't even know if anyone's going to listen to this or it's going to be any good. Okay. It's just fun to be here and really create something ourselves.
I know. I'm excited about getting to like talk to experts about stuff.
Yeah, so let's talk about what we'd love to do. What ideally, I mean, like when we had that conversation that morning and we looked in each other's eyes and we agreed in unison, yes, we are going to do a podcast. Yeah. What was kind of your driving desire?
Well, I want to have an excuse to reach out to experts to fix me.
Now, to fix you as Ellie to fix you as the mom?
No, I'm a really good mom. But there's always questions, and yeah. I feel like it's so great to be able to say, well, I have this podcast, so will you please come on and share your wisdom? And I've got a lot of questions, and I'm excited to get these people in the seat.
Yeah, and we have such a fun and interesting and eclectic list of guests that we're planning to bring in here, and kind of the who's who of. God, all walks of life in Los Angeles. And I feel like being in this city, we are afforded the ability to have like kind of the cream of the crop when it comes to anything from Western medicine to Eastern medicine, to all sorts of different ways of parenting. We're going to have all our friends and some fun celebrity mamas come on and talk about the way that they want to be moms. And I think for me, as you know, because I've said it 8,000 times to you, it's like the most important thing for me is I feel like what we're lacking in the parenting and specifically mothering world right now is this lack of judgment and non-preachiness, you know, that we want to kind of have a place where everyone can come and feel safe and good about themselves and know that however you choose to parent, you know, as long as you're kid is not getting beaten other horrible things.
She giggles nervously.
The dark demons. You know, that you should feel free to do what feels right for you and that really what's important here is instinctual parenting and the idea that, you know, God, we're really doing a bang up job these days of making each other feel guilty and not each other as in you and me. Because we don't do that, but out there, if you go on any of the blogs or forums, you're right there.
No, I am so sorry. I have to raise my seat or something. I'm talking to this microphone that is like up to my forehead.
It's not though. I don't. Oh, I see.
It is. I'm sitting funny.
Do you want help with that?
I do need. I'm going to ask for help. Which is our first lesson as mothers for Atomic Moms is when you need help, ask for it. Don't be ashamed.
Yeah.
Oh, this is getting interesting.
There you go.
Can this go down? Oh, you guys!
You guys, it's our first podcast here, and so we're working out all the kinks. And Ellie, just be taller.
I know. I need to be better. Clearly, I just needed attention. No, but seriously, ask for what you need, people, or you'll spend the whole podcast staring up at this thing.
It's good that we have my very capable and strong husband here, which, by the way, is our first guest. Is my husband.
Beautiful arms.
Michael Catherwood, who we'll be talking to very soon.
Very soon.
So anyway, as they are finishing fixing that for you.
That's fine.
It takes a village here.
We're great.
As you hide it again, though, for the next guest.
Can we edit some of this out?
No, it's
gold. Please. But why this is so much better. Now.
Yeah, except it's not staying in place. It's wanting to move. Oh, here. It's this one. Is it this?
Here we go.
There you go.
Oh, I feel so much better now.
God.
So I can see you. This is so good.
Oh, that's what the problem was.
I was looking at my co-host through a screen.
That's why you thought I looked so good is because I was filtered.
Yeah, exactly. Can you stay behind there?
Yes.
No.
anyway, my point was just basically that I want to have a great place for people to come and to find information and to not feel judged if they choose to do it a different way, little pieces, you know. It's not all black and white. And I think that that parenting is like a little grab bag of whatever you kind of feel works instinctually for you. And so I want that to be this kind of like safe haven here for everyone.
I feel like it's a universal church of motherhood.
Love
it. You can just, you know, there's singing, there's dancing, whatever your thing is. We're super inclusive. We hope you don't just show up at Christmas. It's going to be a weekly thing.
It's going to be a weekly thing. And then hopefully once a month, we're going to have the bunker episode, which is going to be where we get all our crazy friends in here for some wine and just bitching and moaning about anything, really. But hopefully it somehow relates to being a parent.
Yeah.
What else? Before we get our illustrious guest on here, who has had more experience than both of us combined.
Well,
that's not saying a lot.
Wow. I'm mourning my cleavage, so I feel like we need to give a little space for that.
A little moment of silence.
I think so.
I wish I had a 40. Pour it out. Pour it out.
On my size A chest.
I want to talk to you about that because I'm so curious what happens. I am still breastfeeding. You are.
I just finished a week ago.
Yeah.
It's over. But it's not totally over. I'm going to get gross for a second. They're little
droplets
in the shower. Little droplets. And it's really sad because apparently when you stop nursing, you have your body wants to give extra antibodies to the baby because the baby's not getting as much milk anymore.
Right.
So it's sort of like supercharged antibody milk. Again, like at the beginning, the colostrum.
Yeah.
So anyway.
It's like the Wonder Woman of breast milk.
Yeah. I feel like I should sell it on the black market, these little droplets.
So how long after you finished breastfeeding did you notice the boobies kind of dissipate?
Immediately.
Really? Like the next day?
I'd say, well, I slowly
You've been
did
weaning,
it.
Yes.
I've been weaning it. It's been a year. But yeah, this week, all of a sudden, it was like, oh, this is what my shirts look like again.
See, I'm kind of really just not looking forward to that because I have a huge ass. And I really feel like during pregnancy and during this now breastfeeding stage, like my boobs for the first time in my life have complemented my ass. Mm-hmm. Like they look like they belong together. And I feel like now that I've been here, it's going to be really hard to go
back. Well, maybe yours won't go away. I mean, there's a lot of people who say that their boobs stay, but I think those people just had secret implants.
Maybe. Let's find out about that.
That's my conspiracy theory because, oh, man, it's brutal.
Oh, I'm sorry, sister.
I mean, I had one summer of cleavage. That's why I continued nursing. That's not true. I did it because I'm very attuned to my child. No, I don't know. The cleavage. It was fun.
It's fun. It's great. It's fantastic. We'll ask my husband when he comes on here. That's probably a great segue, right? Should we bring
Boobs.
On our,
Let's bring on
our guest?
Yeah.
Please welcome. Clapping. Michael Catherwood.
Thank you. Woo!
A.K.A. Psycho Mike. Known for his stint so far on Loveline and Dancing with the Stars.
That was a stint.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Loveline is your job.
Yeah, that's more my job, yeah. Less than a stint.
So let me ask you, how do you think we're doing so far? Since
so far, so good.
Since
you guys sound great.
Do you have any notes for us?
No. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah?
Yeah. That's Don't worry about editing out, like, the Ellie fixing your microphone and stuff like that. It's,
no,
I think people really...
fascinating.
Well, no, I mean, it's not fascinating at all. But I do think that people respond to, you know, consuming entertainment that doesn't seem like it's so forced. You know, it doesn't seem contrived. You know, it's just two girls talking, which...
Yeah, hopefully someone will want to listen to.
Because in reality, neither of you two have any fucking clue what goes on in a microphone or how to fix it or how to work it. So
no,
like that,
I've never even
So that's
seen...
my point being that, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I were to have my microphone break on the air, I would want that to be taken care of because... That's not supposed to happen on, you know, a radio broadcast where for a guy who's been working in radio for 15 years. For girls who are doing a podcast for the first time and they could care less about the technical aspects of it. They just want to talk about being a mom and they're, you know, that's how life is. You know, that you guys don't care about what brand microphone this is, or if it's going to run through compression, fancy. Or yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
yeah,
that's the way I look at it.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to know about the moment that you found out you were pregnant.
Yeah,
for me or for her?
Both of you. How did you tell me?
Well,
I knew upon ejaculation. So that's when I found out, yeah.
Did you do a little victory dance?
I did. I threw my hands up, threw them down on her. I was like, there it is. I believe I said, that's the money shot. Wasn't
so romantic.
Yeah.
I don't know. Actually, this is a funny story. I hope it is, at least.
We'll be the judge of that.
By the way, we should just say that Michael and I have a 6-month-old daughter, Magnolia, and
she's Sabrina's two?
Sabrina, Ellie's
one.
You were at her birthday.
I know, but she's big.
No, wait, really fast. Okay, she's not that big. I breastfed her for a year. Everyone thought she was obese.
She's not obese because it's only in her face.
I know. She has my cheeks and my mother's cheeks. It's like a thing.
The thighs. The thighs.
No, the thighs are really beautiful. She wears they're skinny jeans. I don't think they're supposed to be skinny jeans, but on her, they're definitely skinny jeans. And there are only certain days that she can wear the skinny jeans, because when you change her diaper, you have to like peel them off her. So it's kind of difficult. But what I'm going to say to that is she seems like she's two, because that first year, they change so much. It's mind blowing.
She's like a different. She's like a whole different creature compared
to
Magnolia.
She's another species compared to Magnolia. So it would seem like she was two.
It's true. I mean, to me, she's like, it's not at all the same.
Well, and
being
I was
around Sabrina and being with Magnolia.
Absolutely. I was talking today to our nanny about, I don't know why I said it like that, but
there's some judgment.
It's also, she's not at all. She doesn't seem like she's a nanny because we've known her for so long.
She's not a nanny. She's actually a friend that's filling in. We've been really fortunate in this first year. To just really be with our daughter, since Michael works, on Loveline at night, and he has jobs during the day, but it's not consistent enough to really take him out.
We don't work 9 to 5. I mean, we're very lucky in that regard.
Yeah.
But when you go back to filming on the amazing, incredible Undateable, which Ellie's husband created, again, let's remind everybody, on NBC, coming back in 2015, you know, things are going to be way different. I mean, it's going to be a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel so grateful, and I think neither of us would have a nanny if we had to. I mean, we are not.
I totally agree.
We're not people that we would love to be with. And I know most people out there would prefer to be with their kids and can't afford to. I understand that. You got to go to work. You got to take care of the kids that you just had.
I was thinking about that the other night, where whether or not one of us could completely sacrifice either of our careers and stay home for the sake of just there being one parent at home. And sure, we could. And then I thought, are we being selfish are we only working so much and so hard for the sake of having a certain lifestyle?
No.
And then I thought to myself, yes and no, because we're both working to support a lifestyle that includes like sending Magnolia to college. But we're not working to support a lifestyle that includes like numerous Mercedes. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought to myself, I was like, well, if we moved to a different neighborhood and maybe like changed around our car situation,
like got rid of one of our five cars,
like Magnolia, or like I could
Do
not
you really have five cars.
It's stupid.
Oh,
it's,
you guys.
We
well, no. In our defense, we're not exactly
the rest of America. Just like
I know, but wait, hold on. Should we do? But there's some caveats that need to be pointed out. When we got married,
four of them are on blocks.
Well, when we got married, we each owned two cars. It wasn't like so. We got married and those got combined.
We love classic cars. So we each have a classic car.
She has a 79 Jeep, and I have a 66 GTO, which are both. They don't really count as car. I mean, again, those are more.
You can't drive those
are
every
memorabilia.
Day.
Yeah. And then one of the car she's mentioning is a motorcycle, so that doesn't necessarily
and then we also have the Mini Cooper, which is part of Michael's campaign that he's doing
for Mini. That is a free car, so it's not like P. Diddy.
No, of course.
But as I was saying, if we were to change around things, blah blah blah, I could easily not go to work because Bianca is the main breadwinner without question. But if there wasn't both of us working to kind of feed into the machine as it is right now, there'd be no comfort in living in Los Angeles for a long period of time, and there'd be no comfort in providing education for them. You know what I'm saying?
No,
so
I
really thought to myself, I was like, well, is either of us being selfish in just working as opposed to spending time with the kid? But then I thought to myself, no, because what we're doing it for is not for vanity, is not for material purpose.
And you and I are both the kind of people that we would be A-okay with our daughter going to a public school. We would be A-okay with living in pretty much any situation as long as
I assume she'd go to public schools. As of right now, I mean, I'm under.
Well, that's a topic for another podcast.
Right. No, it is.
Only in L.A.
We haven't kind of broached that subject, but I grew up in L.A. and went to public school. I'm an idiot, but I ended up okay. No. It wasn't even that. It was one day about a year ago, Dr. Drew, who's cut to the chase, has tens of millions of dollars, came into Loveline and looked at me we were off the air, and he said in a very serious tone, was kind of grieved. He's like, I don't know how I'm going to continue to pay for my children's college. Now, granted, he has three kids, and they're all they're triplets, so he's paying for three kids at really elite colleges at the same time.
Yeah.
But either way, I thought to myself, I'm like, well, shit. If Dr. Drew is stressing about college, and then he started opening up to me about the cost and the price, and all of his kids really pull their own weight. They're all really good, smart kids, and it's still like close to $1 million a year.
That's nuts.
And I'm like, so I had a panic attack, because then I thought, got to thinking, well, I haven't even had my kid yet.
Wait, $1 million total.
Yeah, yeah.
You said a year.
$1 million, yeah, but I'm talking
three kids.
Travel expenses, tuition for his three children to go to the schools that they go to.
I thought.
I mean,
$350,000 a year, which is insane.
And one of his kids' schools is close to like 140.
That's insane.
A year, wow. Just on tuition.
Yeah, and they're triplets. They're all going at the same time. Yeah. It's crazy. But
with your question of like, is it selfish to have help? Or to pursue your own careers, I think it's something that every mom has to tackle for herself and every family. But I think it's also important to, you know, keep doing what you're doing or what makes you special outside of the home. Like, right? And so also just getting a break for the moms out there that aren't going to work, but they do want to have the opportunity to work out or take care of themselves or go to yoga or just go to the grocery store or have lunch with friends.
Do like anything,
it's not selfish for us to take care of ourselves, because I'll tell you, when I get to escape, you know, my little soulmate who I love so much, when I'm able to leave for a few hours and come back, I am so much more awesome with her.
Oh yeah.
You appreciate them so much more, and I feel like our responsibility to our kids is to be the best person we can be. And that means to take care of yourself and to nurture the things that make you happy. And yes, that's our kids. Our kids make us happy. But we were people before they came along.
But not always.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that the hardest part of the day for me right now is the when she wakes up from her afternoon nap from about 4 p.m., to 6 p.m., 6:30 when she finally goes for her bath and the bedtime ritual begins. And if I've been with her all day on my own, I just am gone by that point. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, and right now we're also dealing with the fact that, like, she's not getting a lot of sleep. I mean, we're really in the thick of that age. And she's just starting teething and, you know, so it's all of that. But the days that I get to go and do something, even if it's just go to the gym and work out, I come back and I'm refreshed and I look at her and she's a new person to me. You know, she's a new being and I feel like I've taken care of me. So, you know, and I, Michael and I are so fortunate in that we really get to do what we love to do, you know, and I know a lot of people out there aren't, and the jobs that they go to are for the necessity of taking care of their kids. And that is to me so, you know, mind-blowingly noble. It's like like single mom, like having one child, having help, getting to do the career that I love. And I think about a single mom taking care of more than one child, and I mean, honestly, like, you know, I'm not worthy, like, praise and worship, because
make sense to me. I don't even understand how you piece it together. I just don't.
Yeah.
You know, I especially on having my job you know, where I take calls every night from people in different situations, usually in situations of crisis, or else they wouldn't be calling the show. And I talk to a lot of like 19-year-old moms and stuff, and I just wonder. I don't understand how you're able to keep it all together. But maybe something biological kicks in, and you're force-fed maturity a little bit. I know that my friends that went to war when we, you know, when I was 20, I was an utter pile of shit. I mean, I was useless. I was a useless human being. But then my friends and I, who would, you know, party together and pump gas together or whatever it may be, they go and they join the Marines, and they get back from the first stint, the second modern incursion in Iraq, and they come back and they were like different people. It was like just something force feeds you to grow up. And I would imagine if you're a single 19-year-old mother, it's kind of the same thing. Your back's against the wall in such a fashion that you either pick up the pace or you crumble. And you know, I just don't understand, because I'm 35 and I'm so lost so much of the time with trying to piece together how to be a good parent.
Isn't it incredible that even you know, we're in our 30s and to realize we're completely different people than before we had our
when
children.
We were in our 20s.
Or before we had our children.
Yeah.
Like every pregnant woman out there, you won't be the same afterwards.
Yeah.
It's just a fact.
Well, and I feel really lucky that, you know, for both Mike and I mean, this is our second marriage, both of us. And so when we...
Look at this.
This is how skilled I am at wrapping it back to your original question. Watch this. When we talked about having a kid, when we decided that it was time, and actually Mike was ready, I think, before even we got married, and I just felt like there was still stuff that I wanted to do in my career. And then I realized, like, that's so silly to even think that way. I just can't.
I keep telling her it's not.
What?
Yeah, if the tables were turned. If you were a guy, no one would ever fault you for that. You know, it's like, it's really kind of a shame that women get put pressured into having to make that choice.
Yeah.
Or like even what we were just talking about, like wondering when to take a break from your career. Not, like, guys are never faced with that.
No. And they don't feel guilty either.
You just keep on pumping out kids and going to work. Like women who now, I guess it's the modern paradox of women, is that thankfully, the glass ceiling is, I wouldn't say it's shattered, but it's certainly been fractured a lot. And women now, for the most part, have great careers just as much as many men do. And, you know, 50 years ago, that wasn't the case. So you just knew it was your time right when you got to about 22. It's like, okay, well, now it's birthing time. Better give up on whatever medial task I do, because I'm a woman and this is what I do. Now, women are everyone's, you know, equal in love in our hippie world that we live in. Which is great, but then women are faced with this horrible paradox of wanting to live out their instinctive primal desire to be a mother, or lose that grip on the career they've worked so hard to build. And it's a terrible, terrible thing to be faced with, because guys aren't ever faced with that. You just aren't.
Or at least my experience at home, like, my husband doesn't feel any of, I don't know, he doesn't have like the guilt or the martyrdom that I have. Like, if I leave for a weekend, he has no problem getting someone to come for 4 hours. Like, he doesn't feel guilty about that at all. It's like, oh, this is great. I want, you know, there isn't that guilt factor. And also with what you're doing as an actress in Los Angeles, I mean, that's like a whole nother level of, you know, you had to hide your pregnancy on the show.
Yeah.
For a while.
For the first...
I mean, the character was never pregnant,
no.
So they just kept putting you in bigger and bigger coats.
Luckily, you have a huge ass, so it was easy to balance it out.
It was supposed to be winter in Detroit, so it worked. But these are things, you know, when you're dealing with... I don't know if you had any nausea.
Oh, I had horrific morning sickness, and also something that I have never read about anywhere. No one's ever talked about it that I have come across. And it was so perplexing to me, was that about 6 or 7 weeks into the pregnancy, I could not stand Mike. Like I thought that if I wasn't a somewhat smart enough person to know, like, well, this is probably hormonal, I would have thought I married the wrong person. Like, made a huge freaking mistake. I would wake up at night and
let's not throw that idea out the window, though. It's very possible you could have married the wrong person.
Maybe no, it was your
not a chance.
Trusting your instincts that we're talking about.
He's the best thing ever, and I love how he downplays it. But I just in this first 6 months of having a kid, I can't think of or imagine having done this with anyone else. He's just been so. Mm. Supportive and helpful.
All right, enough of that.
Okay.
But anyway, she's right, though. No one ever told me that either. No one said, hey, your wife's going to be a massive bitch. And that she's going to turn into a completely different person.
Well, they said that to my husband before we got married.
Did they?
No. But when the minister said, what you know about each other and what you don't know about each other, she was much more eloquent. I have to write them out. I should be better at this. Everybody laughed about that, about what you do not know yet.
Yeah.
They all, everyone laughed, like, oh, he's got no idea what's coming for him.
Well, I do a lot of stuff that rightfully annoys Bianca. Like, I know when I should be making her upset and she's getting frustrated with me, and I go, well, I earned this. But in that first 6 weeks, 7 weeks, like she said, she was getting really upset at me for no reason. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't identify what was making her mad at me. And that, it wasn't frustrating to me. It was hurtful. I was like, well, what?
Yeah.
Because I also felt very neutered. I don't know if a lot of guys go through this, but I felt very kind of handicapped in my ability to do anything to be, because when you're a guy and the baby's in the woman's belly, your hands are tied as far as helping out. You know what I'm saying?
I think that's such a great point, because even after or during the delivery, men feel neutered.
I felt very inadequate,
afterwards. Yeah. The months breastfeeding, after.
Yeah. Well, and it was, and what was so crazy about it, I remember one night I woke up in the middle of the night and I honestly thought to myself, like, it was so pure and real, the urge to hit him as hard as I could in the bed. And I was freaked out by it, because I was like, I love this person. I have fallen in love with this person. I married this person. I was so excited to have a kid with. How can this venom be coming out towards him right now? And I was so upset about it that the next day I was like, I have to find out if other people feel this way. And I started doing some research online, and I found this forum that was all about women talking about hating their husbands. And I laughed till I about peed my pants, because
Jezebel.
Yes. I just remember one woman talking about how her husband walked down into the kitchen, and she said all I could do was stare at him and think about if I could light the little stick of hair he had sticking up in his head on fire. And I identified with that so much.
Okay, do you think it's hormonal, or were there any thoughts behind it? Like,
I've read now, my whole life has changed.
Is there any?
I've read now that there is some evolutionary idea that it is because the woman's need is to focus so solely on herself that she must keep everything else that would require care at arm's length.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if that's...
And I require a shit ton of care.
Yeah, that must be it. Because I would think that, I mean, come on, evolution. Wouldn't it make more sense that we would want to keep our men around when our men... God, I just went back 60 years. I went to Smith College. It's a women's college. And I just I'm really ashamed of myself.
I know, but you shouldn't be, because I think we should go back 6,000 years when we're thinking about this stuff. It's the same thing how you said Adam doesn't feel all that guilty about going to work or going to do things and leave. Because, look, I mean, it's not in his DNA, and it's not in mine. I love my daughter more than anything in the world, but it's just, I'm not a woman and I'm not a mom, and she didn't grow up in my body, and I have a hunter's, I have a hunter's DNA, and you guys are you really are responsible for nurturing and caring for the home while the man is out hunting and providing for the family. I mean, and you know, it's altered greatly, but that's the way it kind of goes in modern society. Even though Bianca is financially, if you look at X's and O's, is the provider for our family for the most part, it's like, I still feel the responsibility to do that. I still feel the burden and the idea that, like, with the overall providing protection, that's my job.
Let me ask you this. What would you say, after the limited experience you've had of being a dad and being a husband, what would you say is the number one, like advice that you could give to women in dealing with their husbands in that first kind of the first child, that first when you're both becoming parents, you're both figuring out how to do it. Like, what do you think like women need to understand maybe more so about men and what they're going through?
If I could give men or women advice about having children, you know, I feel like it's grossly irresponsible for me thinking that I have some secret to say this is what you should do when you're having a kid. But the one thing I will say is if you have any hesitation, then either reanalyze your relationship or wait.
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't be having children with people willy-nilly. And
no,
I know that sounds like such old man, you know,
no,
starchy advice, but it's kind of – there's no amount of words. There's no level of oratory skill that could really properly describe how much responsibility it takes to be a parent, mm-hmm. and how much it puts a stress on your relationship as adults when you bring a child into the relationship. So I can't say here, guys, do this when your white lady gets pregnant or vice versa. Women, make sure you do. But I will say that if going into it, the idea of trying to have a child, if you're at all on shaky ground,
don't do it.
It's time to hit up that couples counselor or get a divorce or break up because
yeah.
It's just not, you know, you probably are in this for the wrong reasons. And a baby is not going to save things. It's only going to make things worse. So unless you've built that foundation on rock solid scaffolding,
yeah.
It's going to be a fucking nightmare.
And I would say the rock solid scaffolding also with ourselves. Like if you're thinking about having a child, it just blows my mind how if I spend days and days with Sabrina by myself, which the first 3 months – my husband was gone always at work. And I was, my mom came out the first week. And then I was alone. And those thoughts that you have can start eating you alive. So I would suggest, you know, figure your stuff out before you have a kid and figure out what tools that you can use or what are the little things that make you happy. Or, you know, meditate or just...
It's great advice.
You know, stretch, take care of yourself physically before you have a child because it's a marathon. And if you, you know, especially those first months, the first 6 weeks, I was like, oh, I got it. And then it hit me really hard. And I was taking care of myself. So I can't imagine if I had done this.
That's great advice because I'm playing catch up now. I feel like I'm sacrificing. I shouldn't say sacrificing because that would make it as if I did it on purpose. I feel like I've compromised the early part of Magnolia's life and certainly my connection with her by not being in a good place when she was born. And now I have to play catch up and I'm doing, you know, working overtime.
I think
that's not a good way to go. If you can really have the self-awareness and the responsibility to prep yourself mentally, emotionally, before you go into being a parent, you know. But look, we may all sound like we're on some ivory tower because a lot of people don't have any of this, the luxury to do any of this. You know, it's just like, man, we got to figure out a way to make this go on a schematic standpoint,
right?
You know?
But you do have the ability. I agree, and I'm totally in an ivory tower. Someone just set it on fire. Whatever, I'll jump. No, that's terrible. Working on the self-loathing.
I want to have the just Ellie Talks to Herself podcast. I could listen to this all day, but then I'll jump. Wait, no, that's terrible. So I mean, the tower's there. It's in Babel. No, it's not. Jerusalem.
So what was the point? Oh, go for a walk, man. Like there are things, and I know a lot of people have so much less who have so much more than me because of their outlook.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who have a lot more than me who I live in a world of scarcity and think they don't have anything. So
go for a
walk.
A lot of it's personal responsibility.
Meditate. Get a book that you like from, you know, to read late at night. Whatever you do. Like, if it's just even, you know, standing in the shower for an extra minute, like give yourself that.
Also, I think
these are little things.
Yeah, I also.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Bianca, but you're exactly right. And that, it's not so much an ivory tower as it's pointing out the fact that a lot of it is just really personal responsibility. I remember when I was 25 and I was married to my first wife, I was making $19,000 a year. I worked 90 hours a week. I would sleep. I never slept. And I still – and I did everything I could to just make ends meet. I was trying to figure out what to do. I was very stressed, and I really – but there was always those moments when I was like, I could right now meditate or do exactly what my psychologist told me and do A, B, and C and go to sleep earlier and take 15 minutes aside to write and paint and do all these things that I know are therapeutic. And I never did. It was always just I kind of took those moments to feel sorry for myself and add to the stress.
Listen, it's extremely difficult when you are already down, when you are already in a place where you feel like you're hitting the bottom of the barrel. It's extremely difficult to have people who are in a better place tell you to do all of these things. And absolutely. Mike and I experienced this very much in our relationship because I've been through my dark past and I somehow did those things, and he would always look at me and be like, it's not that easy. And I understand it's not, but I think for those people, just like you said, pick one thing. Start, you know, you don't get to the top of the mountain by scrambling, you know, straight from point A to point B. You wind your way around and you slowly work up. And so just start with something that you like to do, something that makes you happy, something that gives you a moment of peace. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's our podcast.
Maybe it is.
It is.
I mean, even if your own body, if you scan your body and there's, you know, especially after having a child, my neck and my shoulders are so out of whack. Like, there's so many things that bother me. But, like, God, when I had to get up in the middle of the night and, you know, take care of my daughter and I'd go back to bed and my mind's racing, like, if I just, like, rub my feet together, like, that little thing feels good. Like, what are these little self-soothing techniques that we have for ourselves?
Because when you find those little things, then you open the door of possibility and you start to notice the other things that make you feel good. And it's a lovely just path to a place where you find peace. I want to say thank you to my lovely husband for coming in.
I mean, you guys have to Google this couple. Like, Google image them.
Oh, it's look just who's ridiculous. Talking.
Yes, exactly.
F you. Straight to hell. You and your male model husband. Stop it.
I hope that you'll come back many more times and that we can talk about a lot of other things. Because
well, you're going to come back every time to adjust my microphone, right?
I want to say, in all seriousness, because I know I don't like to do that very much, certainly in public. I wish you two nothing but the best. I think you guys have a great chemistry together. I've been excited about the prospect of this podcast for a long time now because I was one of the few people that was there when the germ of the idea was first started. So I know it's going to be great, and I just hope that you guys continue doing what you're doing and you continue to have to create as much joy in doing this podcast that you do right now, that this kind of feeling lasts for a long time.
Will.
You know,
I think it will.
All right, good.
Love you.
Love you too.
Love you. I'm gonna wait till he takes off. I have to tell you, like, I'm kind of bummed because I had wanted him to. There's this guy that he works with.
Not
Loveline.
Not Dr. Drew.
Not Dr. Drew. Although it would be, we got to get Dr. Drew in here. Hopefully he'll grace us with his presence. But no, there's this guy, Rudy, who's like kind of not, I mean, he's kind of my type because he's like a little bit of a bad boy, but he's so,
and your bad boy.
He's so sexy. And Mike was going to try and get him to come in to talk to us today because he has this amazing wife, sad girl, who's had a ton of kids and he's been in prison. It would just add a lot of color to our podcast. And so I was like kind of, oh my.
Hey, what's up?
Oh my God, it came.
What?
Hi.
Ooh,
what's up, Ina?
I didn't think that you were going to make it. I'm like a little flushed right now.
Who's the weta over here? Who's the blondie?
Hi.
Damn.
This is Ellie. This is my co-host in crime.
Orale. I'd like to try that on for size.
Oh.
You know? Good.
Okay. Yes,
just kidding,
so,
honey.
Rudy, Ellie, Rudy. And
what's
this
up,
is
baby?
This is Rudy's beautiful wife, sad girl, who I was hoping would come in and talk to us.
Oh, stupid. Stupid. Scandalous. Skinny white girls.
So how did you guys meet?
I was at like a como se dice, the Florentine Gardens. You know, it's like a club up in Hollywood.
Yes, and, actually, I live very close to there.
Oh, damn, dog.
I saw someone peeing on the sidewalk there.
Oh, that was probably my cousin Creeper. Like, they used to call him Pito Juice because he used to pee all over the place, you know. But he got blasted in 1974. Like, some vato shot him, and he lost his bladder, got blown out his body. So he has no bladder, no butthole, so he can't eat fiber.
I can't really eat anything, can he?
No, like he could drink the huevo, the juices. So he goes to Press Juicery. Like he has a friend there that makes
the
him
cold Press Juicery.
Greens number one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're doing well.
Verde Uno, I call it. It's dope. You know, it tastes good sometimes.
Is he super skinny?
Yeah, but like also he does a lot of meth too. So
keeps that'll make you skinny.
Keeps him lean, you know.
So, Rudy, we're hoping that you could enlighten us a little bit about your and Sad Girl's relationship. And how many kids do you guys have?
Damn, dog. I didn't know you were going to hit me with the Barbara Walters hard-hitting question, dog. Let me see. Times four, carry the one. Four.
Oh, God.
11?
Right. So, okay.
14.
14.
Yeah, damn, that's right, eh? Like a powerful jizz.
So, Sad Girl,
my meckles are strong, like bull.
Does Sad Girl actually, is that your real name? Is that your...
My name's Pilar.
Pilar, that's so pretty. That's such a pretty name.
Scandalous, stupid, pretty name.
Oh, well...
Sad Girl, Pilar, do you have any advice for our mothers out there?
Just...
not so many children.
When you give birth, rub the stupid cocoa butter on your panocha...
Before or after?
During. And
I did not do that. Did you do that?
And when the baby's first born, take the mira, como se dice, the frisbee of blood.
The placenta.
And put it in your chucha with a mango for 3 days.
Stop it.
I don't.
That sounds unsanitary.
I don't know.
But you know, people in LA eat their placenta.
Then you eat the mango with... the wax from a Virgin Mary of Guadalupe candle.
Oh.
And it makes your panocha tight again. Scandalous. I'm stupid.
I could work on... Well, no. I'm like, God, don't overshare, Ellie. But let me tell you.
My friend...
Coconut oil would have been good because...
My friend, Lil Maniac, he has a taco truck in East Los. Yeah. And they serve placenta tacos. It's dope.
Really?
Yeah.
Where do they get the placenta?
Little cilantro all over East Los. Girls having babies like crazy, dog, you know? They're raining placenta.
Well, listen. I just want to say to Rudy and Sad Girl, it was a pleasure.
Oh, damn. It's a real pleasure to meet you ladies. I really like, you know, I always liked you, Bianca, you know, because me and Mike go way back and stuff, but... like, it's really nice to meet you, Ellie. You know,
my
little blonde angel. You know what I'm saying? You know,
thank you.
Like to get to know you better. And who's this hyena back here?
Oh, that's Maria.
Oh, damn. I'll knock her boots from here to El Monte and back.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming.
Well, I hope you'll come back to visit us.
All right. I got to go wait for the AAA truck, you know, because my Buick on spokes, you know, I came in here with the hydraulics. I think I busted a gasket, so I got to wait for the jump my car. But, like, you girls, keep up the good work. I wish you best of luck with your podcast and, you know, keep your head up.
Thank you. We look forward to hearing
bye,
more
sad
from
girl.
You on Loveline.
Oh, bye-bye.
Scandalous.
Well, that was a surprise. I thoroughly enjoyed that interview.
Oh, yeah. I'm still stuck on the coconut.
I was kind of wanting you to go with your... we're all about TMI here, aren't we?
Yeah, I should have done some massaging. They talk about that stuff, and we never did it.
We did. We did.
We didn't prep.
Mike and I did the perineal massage.
Yeah. We did not. I think I tried Adam. He's so Midwest about it all.
For everybody who hasn't heard about the good old perineal massage, it's supposed to help you from tearing when you give birth. Yeah. And you did tear, didn't you?
I had some stitches, man. I had 45 minutes of pushing. Unmedicated, and a lot of stitches, and I didn't know that, you know, you walk around in a pad for a long time.
Yeah,
but I never did the Kegels beforehand either.
I didn't do Kegels. I did a lot of sitz baths, which apparently
what is that?
That helps a lot. That's like the plastic thing that goes on your toilet, and you put like hot water in it and sit in it. You basically sit with your bare butt, and it's supposed to soften the whole area. And I did that for 10 minutes every day for a month leading up to
birth. That's a thing.
And by the way,
a sitz bath?
It's a sitz
bath. It's like a bird bath for your...
Yeah, people do it after they have surgery. I'm surprised nobody told you to do it when you had your stitches. It would have been really...
No, I was told to pour witch hazel in a pad.
I bet that felt great.
If you put it in the freezer, it helps. But
yeah.
It's still terrible.
The sitz bath is amazing. And actually, I kind of came... It was like my own little... I made it like a little spa in there. Yeah. I put like light a candle and... It's quite nice.
Next baby, I'll ask for a gold bidet
and
then fill it up with hot water.
So you had a natural birth in the hospital.
I did.
And what was the reasoning? You were against an epidural or?
Well, I wasn't against it. I wanted to give it a shot. I had a surgery a few years ago for my knee. I had a bone tumor. It's called a giant cell tumor. It's incredibly rare. It's 1 in 1 million per year. And with that, I had a nerve block in my leg for a few days after my surgery. And it was a long process, and I got to learn how to walk again and all this stuff. And so I think with having Sabrina, I knew I wanted to be in the hospital, but I wanted to do it on my own. And there was something about, if possible, I didn't want to feel disconnected from the experience. Mm-hmm. And I know what it's like to feel paralyzed from, you know, the waist down. And I didn't want to do it that way because of my tumor experience. The last time I had spent a significant amount of time in the hospital was when, I didn't feel empowered and I was scared. And so I wanted to be able to go in this time and really like own the experience, walk around. We ended up in the bathtub at a point. And then at the end with the pushing was hilarious though, because I really thought the doula who was there also said, you know, once you get to pushing, it feels so good. It's great. And, you know, I had seen the videos and like women seem to sort of like orgasm out their babies. These videos are amazing. They're like, it'll be like, and that's it, right? Well, my birth video will not be shown like in hypnobirthing because it was a lot of grunting and yelling. And then the doula was like, don't do that with your voice. And I was like, I'll do whatever I want. I want it out. But the pushing, no orgasm. That was very, very difficult. And my OBGYN later said, though, that like it's good that it took that time because, it needed time to sort of stretch out or whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, and you weren't so numb that you didn't know what you were doing or feeling when you were pushing.
And I'll tell you, after when I had her, it really was amazing I had a blindfold on, actually. You know, they tell you to bring this stuff to relax, I guess. Well, I just kept it on because every time I saw the medical equipment, I'd kind of freak out. So I had a mask on while I was pushing, and they were like, take off the mask. And so finally I took off the mask, and right when she was coming out. And the video, it's so funny because I'm just like, it looks like my head exploded. And it kind of did because you're just like, this is crazy. This person is here now.
It's here now.
You see me go into like another dimension.
Yeah.
And then to be able to walk down the hall like the next day, to have my full
faculties.
It was just because of this other experience I had, it was really great. And to now I can, you know, my husband's always like, you have no pain threshold, you have da da da. And I'm like, oh buddy, you could never say that again.
It's different though too, don't you think? I mean, it's a different type of pain.
It's a lot of surrendering.
And I just want to say that, you know, you and I have talked about this at great length because we both did natural births and I did mine at home. And I find that whenever I talk to someone that I don't know and they ask, you know, what hospital I had Magnolia at, and I said, well, we did it at home, and they always immediately launch into like kind of a stammering of, well, I had mine at the hospital, but I did this, you know, because I want to do this. And I always wish, and I guess I'm taking this opportunity to kind of put it out there and say, like, for any women out there who have had kids, who are having kids, you know, are you know, not even pregnant, but one day want to have kids, you got to do it the way you want to do it. I mean, I am in no, I have no judgment for anybody who decides to schedule a C-section, because it is such a personal thing. And you have to be so comfortable in that moment to have the experience that you want. And by the way, you may set out to have a birth a certain way, and it may go exactly the opposite way. And I think that the most important thing is that you have a baby.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, you have a baby, exactly. You have a child. And I am so not into this browbeating that's going on with, you know, no one should feel like they're a better mother because of the way they chose to birth their child.
Right. Or the way that the baby chose to be birthed.
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
It's such a good lesson that, you know, we set out with our intentions, and then, you know, you got to give it up, because who knows? I mean, I've had girlfriends who've tried, you know, went down the path of a natural birth, and some of them who labored for days and then had to have a C-section. And, you know, I had a natural birth, but I was not, I didn't spend days in that like they did, you know. So this whole, like, you don't get a certificate or a ribbon anyway that you have a you know, you choose to have your baby, or the baby chooses to be born, and you just, I don't know. I'm speechless, because it's such a big thing.
It's
such a
big thing.
And there's so much shame wrapped up in, like, not being able to have the birth that you wanted to have.
And it's really the first big step of preparing you for parenthood, I think, because your kids are going to have their own mind made up about a million different things. And if you can't wrap your head around your birth being different than what you expected it to be, you're going to have a hell of a hard time wrapping your head around when your kids turn out to be different than you expected them to be. And we all do it. We all have these ideas of, you know, right. You're like, oh gosh, she's really talking a lot and using her voice. Maybe she's going to be a singer. You know, I mean, you do that. And the fact is, they're going to be who they're going to be. And we're just kind of along for the ride. So I think
it's like
that,
set your intention and let go of your expectation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I mean, look, I'm not an expert. I have a 6-month-old. I am barely, my pinky toe is barely in the water.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're like totally in the water right now. It's 6 months, man.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, don't you feel like everywhere you go, when you talk to somebody whose kids are a year or 5 years or 7 years, or now they have 2 kids or 3 kids, you know, it's like someone's always there to be like, just wait.
Oh, I know, always. And then wait till you have more, and then wait till, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's true, because I feel like you have issues, and I'm like, oh God, well, just wait, because now Sabrina is up in everything nonstop.
Yeah.
And you just can't, it's always something new, always different challenges, always.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you pointing at?
What's your mom session?
My mom's session for the week. Well, I got to say, you know, we didn't talk about our atomic mom shelter that we have here, this beautiful teepee that every guest will be photographed in and will be up on our Instagram page and Twitter and all of that, mm-hmm. at Atomic Moms. And my obsession would be Dolly and Francis make a teepee, which we will have up on our site. And
they have the cutest teepees ever for kids.
They do custom teepees. And I had them actually, first they made one for my daughter Magnolia, which is gorgeous. And you can specify the color and if there's certain things that you want on them. And then, you know, they ship them out, and they're two beautiful, amazing ladies. And I love mine. It is so, and yeah, you know how fun it is. I mean, she's not even 6 months and she is 6 months. She's not even a year yet. And she loves being in
super
it.
Super into it.
Yeah.
No, it's great. And by the way, these are things that we share because we're obsessed with them. We have not gotten anything. Or we haven't been paid anything. My mom's session is, God, there's this really cool t-shirt company out of Austin called We Rascals. And it's so cool. I'm just going to read you their little about thing because I think it's so cool. We Rascals was born out of a desire to see real life heroes have meaning in our kids' lives and wardrobes. Wanting something different from the mass marketing of cartoon characters, we recognized a need to present faces of real people for all kids to admire. Aww. We set out to rediscover who a superhero really was, and we ended up finding several along the way. So you can buy these t-shirts that have like Abe Lincoln and Frederick Douglass so and cool. Joan of Arc.
Love
like these
that.
Historical. You know, love figures that. On these little right. toddler tees.
And then our last order of business is our mom bomb. And that will be every episode. We will have a little pearl of parenting wisdom for you. And I think you have one. Right
I have
now
one. I was watching Breaking Bad and it came up. this is it's short and sweet. But think about it. It's take yes for an answer. There's so many times that someone will give me what I want and I kind of like come up with a million excuses as to not to do it. If you just take yes for an answer and see what happens.
Love that. So simple and good. All right, you guys, thanks for listening. We hope you come back for more. And remember, trust in your goodness, live out your greatness, and rock on, Atomic Moms.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
A few days ago, Brooke Tudine posted an inspirational quote on her wall that got 17 likes and 3 comments. Thumbs up, Brooke. Geico also wants to make a comment. In just 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance by switching to Geico. And nothing says inspiration better than saving money. Well, except for those posters that say things like teamwork, excellence, and make it happen. Hashtag keep climbing. Hashtag savings.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.